Welcome to Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. A space for honest conversations about mental health, self-love, relationships, living more consciously, finding clarity, and spreading light through all of life's challenges. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. Today, I'm joined by Kristen Swan. She is a writer, storyteller, question asker, and experiential learner whose life has been full of twists, turns, second chances, and unexpected teachers. Kristen is known for her openness, honesty, and her ability to turn everyday experiences into powerful insights about hope, resilience, and human connection. Her work encourages people to slow down, ask better questions, and look more closely at the stories they tell themselves. Her approach to spirituality is grounded, accessible, and refreshingly real. Kristen, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Natalie. I'm delighted to be here. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Same here. I'm excited to get this started. Before I begin with the questions, I would love to get into your story and just how you came to be where you are today. So could you share just a little bit about your background and what shaped the way you see the world today?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, experiential learner, which for me looks like I am a person who I love to say yes. And sometimes that yes, the yes always gives me great information. Sometimes the information is that I don't necessarily need to do that thing again, but a lot of times it has just, it's led me to different people and places. But going back a little bit, I grew up as an only child, and I was also an only grandchild for many, many years. And that, I think, was so formative because I spent a ton of time with my grandparents. And so especially as we kind of dig into that storytelling aspect and really lots of stories, you know, from my grandparents especially. And it was a little bit chaotic, a lot of moving around growing up, which meant that I went to school, a lot of new schools. So being kind of that new kid a lot and just learning to navigate that. And so a lot of uncertainty in some ways around my upbringing. And, you know, there were times in my life where my response to that was to try to control everything, right? To become very scheduled and regimented. And also, I think that bit of chaos and uncertainty sometimes, you know, left me feeling like I wasn't sure who I could rely on. And so, you know, a lot of resilience and self-reliance was built into me through that. And again, not always sometimes being too self-reliant, right? And not being able to ask for help, right? And so I like to think of really that those early beginnings instilled a lot of curiosity, creativity has also been a real through line. I have a background in fine art. As you mentioned, I write. The writing really has been a new evolution to my creative journey. But yeah, that there's these pieces that were of just characteristics and experiences, and my response to those has been interesting as they have evolved over time, and also the willingness to let go of certain things that I don't need to do anymore, right?
Yeah. It sounds like your childhood, you moved around a lot, you mentioned, and you've always been really creative and really resilient. Maybe you could talk a little bit just about how that experience growing up shaped your spirituality.
For as difficult and as, you know, as much as I didn't like being the new kid, you know, I didn't really like moving homes. I mean, I was just really, really longing for that sense of stability, kind of that external markers, right, of stability. And I think what ended up happening was this kind of reliance on myself, but also for whatever reason, and I don't know why, but also a certain amount of trust that things will be okay. And because, I mean, ultimately they were, right? I mean, as much as kind of situations would present themselves, they worked out in the end. And and they didn't always work out the way that you thought they would, right? So right. I think that's the other thing is just I've always had a sense of being kind of cared for in a bigger way.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I definitely can attest to that as well. Like the more you get comfortable, I call it like certainty in the uncertainty. Like I think the more we encounter situations that are uncertain, the more comfortable we become and the more we're able to put ourselves in those challenging situations and have faith and have, you know, the sense that everything's going to work out. But I think a lot of people are very afraid to do that and step out of their comfort zone and do things that are uncertain, that they don't know what the outcome will be. So yeah, I think it's just like a muscle that you can flex. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you get being uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Basically. Yes. So let's talk about spirituality on the daily. What does that look like for you now?
When I first wake up, and a lot of times, even before I open my eyes, I take several deep breaths in a way, both to kind of reconnect to myself, right? As in gratitude, because I'm awake, I'm breathing. Those first breaths each morning that I take, I'm also thinking very specifically about kind of energetically how I want to show up for the day, right? And I mean, there's kind of a baseline of being open and being kind. But I mean, on certain days, I know that it's going to be a super busy day, right? So I just am kind of breathing in and really looking to co-create essentially a sense of calm within myself. Also that trust, right? That kind of the willingness to give over to the universe is how I think of it, that I'm going to get everything I need to get done today, right? And it's going to be okay. So I think that I have a working and daily dialogue with what I consider kind of the universe about, you know, how I want to show up, what I'm looking to get done. If it's a day that I really want to be, I know that I've got a lot of writing that I want to do, or I'm thinking about some new projects, and I'm certainly inviting in creativity, right? And also along with creativity, I'm just asking for patience. Because we know that the way that we create things sometimes it doesn't, you know, it starts off pretty messy or a little bit unclear. So that's, you know, and that's how I start my day. And then throughout, as I move through the day, I do try to take just those moments where I'm pausing and where I'm just again, kind of taking a breath and resetting, especially this time of year. It's very easy to get on kind of this, you know, fast track of life. And so I think it's, you know, spirituality for me is I have to be grounded in myself first and foremost, and then I can connect to essentially the expansive nature of the universe.
Right. Yeah, I think like many things, when it's like when they say on the plane, you have to put your oxygen mask on before you can help others. You have to give that energy to yourself before you can share it with others. Amazing. Yeah. And you describe discovering your spiritual autobiography as mapping hope. What does that mean for you?
Well, I actually came to that after I had been teaching this class for a little while, because what I realized in the way the format of the class is, it's a small group in person. It's centered on writing. We go through several different types of prompts, and it really is kind of drawing from your personal history, and also to a certain extent, I mean, we all are part of our inherited and acquired beliefs, right? And so kind of sifting through those and also asking ourselves some of the big questions around how do I create this life of meaning and purpose, right? And mm-hmm. have I been doing that up until this point? Right. And one of the things that I think that happens when you do kind of an intensive survey, and it's the spiritual autobiography is different than your regular autobiography, so to speak, in that we don't necessarily look at going chronologically, right? We're not just kind of like, okay, yeah. This is the day I was born. This is what happened. This is, you know, we're really looking into themes, kind of themes of your life, the people, right? You mentioned that I've been gifted with these wonderful, unexpected teachers. And so that process of reflection and then actually writing about it, I think you begin to see all these incredible moments that have built your life to this point, right? And how little we could have predicted, especially in times of difficulty, like I was saying, you know, that, you know, when you're in it, number one, it usually doesn't feel like you're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
And so I think just in the simplest terms, discovering your spiritual autobiography and writing a spiritual autobiography is mapping hope, because you are essentially claiming your space and saying, I'm still here. And also noting that, like, tomorrow you can write a whole new page of your life, right? That you have that opportunity, or forget about even tomorrow, like in the next minute.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very true. I think, like you said, a lot of the time we can't really see the forest through the trees, or we can't really see the bigger picture of why these things are happening in the moment or get out of them, like you said. But I think ultimately everything that's happening to us is happening ultimately for us, not to us. Yes. And a lot of the time we say, why did this happen to me? Why me? But really it is. It's all for you, for your growth, for a lesson, for some bigger reason. And a lot of the time we can't see that, especially in the dark times or in the challenging times. But then later on, I don't know how you feel about this, but personally, I feel like pain and hardship is actually like such a blessing in the long term. But in the short term, we can't really see that, you know?
Oh, yeah, we can't see that. And certainly there are things that I would never suggest to anyone, that these are for your benefit. I mean, the tragic loss of a loved one, or, you know, these types
job
of things.
Loss.
And I don't think that's what either one of us are saying.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, but yes, I mean, there have been, I was this morning when I was journaling, I was thinking about, so I've been married 3 times, and I am happy to say I am married to my third and last and best husband. And
3 times the charm, right?
Well, for me, for sure. Again, I mean, I would love to be that person who is celebrating, you know, 25 years of marriage. Or, I mean, my grandparents were married for 73 years. And, you know, I would have loved to have had that. And I just didn't. And I was reflecting on my marriage with my second husband, and we were just not the best people
compatible
for each other. We didn't elevate each other, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we in some ways kind of were attracted to each other because, you know, there's some schools of thought that you kind of bond with people who are kind of equally as wounded, right, as yourself. And I think that we certainly were that. And in your best case scenarios, you can support each other and heal together. And in, you know, the worst case scenarios, you kind of just keep inflicting pain on each other. And, you know, and as I was thinking about my second husband, I was, you know, there was part of me that was just felt like that there was so much information that was given to me about who this person was, that if I had been paying attention, would have given me the information that this was probably not going to be a good fit, right?
Yeah.
And yet I didn't, because I didn't have that awareness, and I you know, I wanted to ignore certain things. And as a result, you know, it was a long, kind of painful process of being together and then ultimately coming apart. And I know how much I learned from that. And it's mm-hmm. been invaluable, and it informs how I show up today in my marriage. But boy, like, as I was just even reflecting on it this morning, I just thought, gosh, Kristen, you know, really, I just was being really hard on myself because I was like, why did you make that choice? And so I think that, you know, I think that as we live and make choices, and, you know, hopefully we're learning through these different experiences and allowing ourselves to learn, right, and be open to the lesson. That yep. also part of the lesson in there is we have to forgive ourselves, too.
Yeah, so true. I've also gone through similar experiences. By the way, like I was in a 7-year relationship. We ultimately ended it before our wedding, like we were engaged. But now the way that I'm dating is totally different because of this whole experience that I've had, where now I'm much more looking at the compatibility more so than just the romance aspect. And yes, you need the romance, and yes, you need to be attracted. But I think the lesson I learned is that the bottom line is, are you truly compatible? Do you have the same life goals? Do you have the same values? The bigger picture things. And I think we get really caught up in the, you know, smaller things, or the interests or the looks, or, you know, things that don't matter as much per se. And now the lesson I've learned, definitely in a similar way, it's just like, yeah, definitely dating completely differently now and much more aware of the compatibility in terms of values and goals. But yeah, I think like anytime we go through something really difficult or something painful, there's always a lesson to be learned. But we often, most of the time, we don't see the lesson, and it feels almost like a punishment or just something unfair. But I would love if we could talk a little bit more about your just philosophy and your beliefs. I would love to hear why you believe that people are more afraid of success than failure.
Well, it goes back to what we started talking about, right? That comfort with the uncomfortable, or mm-hmm. especially uncertainty,
right?
And so, you know, if you say to most people, you know, would you like to succeed at this or would you like to fail at this? Most people are going to say, oh, I want to succeed, right?
Right.
They're not going to say, I want to fail. However, how we, you know, how we behave and the things that we do so often actually get in the way of our success because, you know, failure is familiar. Right?
Yeah.
It's familiar. And by extension, that familiarity is
there's comfort in that. Yeah.
And we all know, I mean, whether it's relationships that we've been in that don't feel good, but they're familiar and we stay in them too long, whether it's, I mean, I think of different jobs, right? That don't feel like a good fit, but again, and so there's, with failure, there's a real certainty mm-hmm. of a sense. And I think the thing about success that, and I just want to clarify that I think that success is one of those wallpaper words that I talk about, because wallpaper words are these words that we use, like success. And I think, you know, even authenticity kind of is becoming a bit of a wallpaper word. They're words that we are using on an everyday basis or with you know, regularity. And we are assuming a cultural or a societal definition of that. So if you say success, most people immediately right here in this moment that we're at are thinking, oh gosh, financial success, maybe it's a big title, right? So power. So it's those kinds of things. And I think that we have to be super clear about what is our personal definition of success, right? Yeah. And I think that this is something that I would suggest that most people look at on a yearly basis, because your definition of success is going to change depending on your age, depending on, you know, your situation,
lifestyle.
I mean, it's going to be evolving. most likely. So if you were to sit with yourself and say, okay, what is really my definition of success? And you, you name that, and then to move forward to live into that definition, there are going to be places that are unfamiliar. And that's when, you know, the fear can come in and we can start self-sabotaging. Sometimes I used to do business coaching. I work primarily with business owners and founders, and I did that for about a decade. And, you know, it's like they would say that they want to grow their business by this much or this many clients or geographically. And, you know, we'd start talking about the steps that you need to take. And then it was kind of this reverting to old patterns of behavior. So, I mean, whether they were conscious or not, that we're getting in the way of the thing that they were saying that they wanted. And I mean, we do the same thing in our personal lives.
So true. Yeah. I think like what's the phrase, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. But like, I think a lot of people get really comfortable, like we were saying, in those, you know, situations that aren't really serving them, but whether it's because they're either living unconsciously or, again, just like we said, the fear of that uncertainty, they end up staying in those situations that are not helping them to grow or actually achieve success, whatever that might look like, because of the fear of just the unknown is scary, I think.
Yeah, the unknown is scary. And then I think also it's, we were talking about storytelling, and the way that I really think about storytelling is there's the stories that we tell ourselves, right? And it can get really noisy up here. And that's, you know, we're kind of on a loop, you know, around that. And there's also those stories that we've inherited, right, that have been kind of told to us by our family, or that we've kind of seen lived out by how we grew up. And then there's the stories that we choose to tell others. And that's really when we can, you know, we get to really select what we reveal to others, right? Or what we choose to hide. And I think that in part, that journey towards the successful life that you're saying that you want, you also probably want to be taking a little inventory on kind of what is the story that you're telling yourself. Because the other thing too is that we can be getting in our way by thinking we don't deserve it.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people think they don't deserve it? Is it just self-sabotage? Is it like inherited beliefs? Is it confidence?
I think it's a combination of different things. And I think for me, it took me a long time to think that it was okay for me to pursue things that really mattered to me. And that, I mean, I think that we all, at the end of the day, we want to be loved and we want to be lovable, right? Yeah. And so sometimes you can feel like the real you is just not that lovable, especially, you know, in some ways, the way that I grew up, there was a sense of, you know, there's when there's only one child and there's all these adults, there's a lot of attention. And kind of every adult in my world had an expectation of how I was supposed to show up, right?
Right.
And so that doesn't give you a lot of time to figure out who you are. And it also doesn't really reinforce the idea that who you are is great, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we're kind of in another moment of that collectively as a society, when we have so many external, you know, inputs that are saying you're supposed to be this, you're supposed to be that, you are, you know, you're supposed to be successful in this way, you are, you know, you're supposed to be matched up with another person in this way, all these different things.
Yeah.
And again, I just think all of that is a way to really distract yourself from just kind of getting still and saying, hey, you know, what am I about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what am I about? And what matters to me. And I think the more that you can do that and really be okay with it, meaning that you can share yourself with others, kind of the self that is you, you will find that that you will be lovable, right? However, I think that we're being kind of told that there's very specific formulas for things, and it's not true.
Yeah. I very much agree with what you said about like our observed beliefs about ourselves. And I think a lot of us, like you said, we're told we're supposed to live our life a certain way, whether that's being in a partnership, whether that's career-wise, whether that's, you know, our lifestyle. And I think a lot of it is not, we never like consciously really choose it. We're just like, okay, that's what I was told all my life. I'm going to, you know, abide by those rules, but we never really question it. And I think, yeah, absolutely. It's up to us at some point, eventually, whether it's through an awakening, whether it's through pain, at some point we have to decide for ourselves, do I actually want to live by these rules that have been told to me, or do I want to live in another way? What's truly important to me? Who am I truly at my core? And I think a lot of us don't ever question those things and don't ever like consciously make the decision of how we want to live and who we want to be.
Yeah. And I think that we do that in some ways because we have, well, I'll speak for myself. I mean, there are, I think sometimes I would observe people and I'd be thinking, gosh, they seem so comfortable. They seem so happy. They, you know, look, they are in a great partnership, or they, you know, they're doing this job that just seems like they're just so alive in this. And I kind of mistakenly, I would make a lot of assumptions about that was a way to be, rather than what would have been so much more meaningful in that moment would have been to really sit down with that person and say, gosh, you seem like you love your job. Like you just see, I don't necessarily at this moment. And so tell me your journey. Like, how did you figure out this? Yeah. Or do you love it as much as I think you love it? Right. Like,
you actually love it. Yeah.
Getting curious with them. And so rather, again, kind of, I think that it's easier for us to kind of look at people and put all of this assumption on it of, oh, this is must be the way that it is. And so we kind of were like, oh gosh, I probably have to do X, Y, and Z to get there, to mimic this thing so that I will have this outcome. Where I think that the outcome of being comfortable in the sense of authentically comfortable and being confident and happy and content, I guess, is also a big part of it. That destination is, there's many, many different ways to get there, right?
So
and to not assume that someone else's, you know, GPS is your GPS, in other words.
Yeah, so true. Sometimes there's peaks and valleys, ups and downs, and eventually we're going, you know, upwards and to the right, but that direction is different for everyone. And you're going to have times when life is going great, and you're going to have times when things go totally unexpectedly and not according to the plan. But totally, yeah, we have to just forge our own path and see where life takes us sometimes. I would love to, going off of that, I would love to hear just how you personally are able to find hope when things feel chaotic or uncertain. Like, what's your go-to method of inspiration?
Oh, gosh. Well, I always want to be very, very careful not to romanticize just how icky it feels when you are in the midst.
In a tough spot.
In a tough spot. It just, ugh, right?
And so true. I was like, it's fine. Just get over it. Just be happy. Just move on.
It's like, I don't even want to get out of bed, right? Yeah. Or I don't want to. Yeah, yeah. So a couple of things that I know from my own life is, I mentioned at the beginning when we were talking about, you know, that given the chaos, I became very you know, self-reliant, right? And the byproduct of that was this sense that I had to figure everything out, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had to figure it out because I could rely on myself, but other people is a little dodgy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just not true. Like asking for help is ask for help. I mean, for a bunch of reasons, asking for help can often be the place to start. And it can be as simple as, you know, calling up a friend if you're feeling really down and just saying, I feel like I'm never going to laugh again. Will you help me laugh again?
Yeah.
And
so true.
And people love to help. It feels good. We love to help. I mean, so what feels worse is think of the times that you have felt helpless, right? I mean, we hate feeling helpless. We love helping each other. So I think asking for help is such a great reminder and not to isolate yourself, right? And even a stranger will be available for you to say, you know, asking for the simplest thing. And I think even sometimes you can even ask for help if you believe in a higher power, right? If you feel like you believe in a God or the universe is the word I choose to use. But because I think in the naming of what you would
ask for,
want help with or what you're asking for, there is just a release, right? And there also can be, it can also give you a little bit of information for like just one step forward that you can take.
So true.
Yeah.
Sometimes just like also giving energy to it or like putting those thoughts behind it, the answer will come to you somehow through that energy.
And also just getting it out of, I mean, we can get so in our heads, right? So I think that asking for help has always, you know, has been a more recent kind of strategy for me at releasing my need to be able to figure everything out for myself and being willing to say, oh, I need help today, right?
Totally.
And then I think the other thing too is in conjunction with this, I just mentioned that, you know, taking the very smallest step forward, the smallest step forward, you know, and for some people that could be taking a shower on a day that you just like, you don't want to get out of bed.
Or getting out of bed, I was going to say.
Yeah, just or getting out of bed. Right. Exactly. Let's back up. I'm already five steps ahead. Okay. Let's say you got out of bed and you're wandering around. Take a shower, you know, or water is great. I mean, I think part of my daily, I know I drink a ton of water. I love taking a bath. It's like such a great soothing place. Water, but just figure out the real truth for pretty collectively for us is we always have a choice in every situation. And when you're not in a great situation, a lot of times our choices don't really feel, they don't feel that good.
Yeah.
But also just to recognize you always have a choice.
So true.
And when you choose and when you do nothing, that's a choice.
Yeah. I think that's the unconscious choice is doing nothing. I think a lot of people get really caught up in the rat race or in, you know, a dire situation. And their choice is to stay stuck because it's easier. Like we said, the devil, you know, he's here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you say that better questions lead to better lives. What does it mean to ask better questions?
Well, I think that starting with yourself, right? So I mentioned journaling. I have a journal that I created that's called Spaghetti on the Wall. And
love that name.
Oh, it's super simple. I recommend that people, you know, don't spend more than 15 minutes. This is not something to belabor, but part of the process of Spaghetti on the Wall is I do it in the morning. So I'm thinking about the day prior and I'm kind of journaling about the day prior. And then I ask myself in that reflection, like, where were the yeses of my day? Like, what were just some like moments that were really great? And they don't have to be, you know, it's not like you have to have won the lottery or anything like that. I mean, I'm thinking about even this morning, I went to go by Coffee Beans and I ran into somebody who I hadn't seen in so long. And it was like, oh, how great was it? And we got to talk for about 5 minutes. We both could just take a minute and we weren't like racing like, oh, hi, it's great. I'll call you later. You know, we actually sat and looked at each other in the eye and had a couple of minutes. Like, that's a great yes for me.
Yeah.
The other thing that the journal Spaghetti on the Wall asks you is reflect on the things that, you know, I call them not so muches, which means, mm-hmm. you know, where are you kind of like, I not so much can be how I showed up to, you know, a family gathering. It can be something that I signed myself up to do and I realized, yeah, probably don't need to do that again. So I think checking in with yourself around like, where do you feel yourself lighting up, you know, and then yeah. where do you feel yourself kind of shutting down or just, you know, feeling like you just, it's too much or whatever. So I think yeah. those kinds of questions are great. So you start with yourself. And then I think we all know that there's open-ended questions, right? And then there's those yes and no questions. So, I mean, next time you're in a gathering or you have the chance to, you know, talk with someone else, ask an open-ended question, you know, get to know who they are, what makes them tick, because we have so many similarities. We have so many more similarities than we have differences, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the other reason to ask better questions, you know, and then listen. You got to listen. That's the other key about asking better questions is actually give the other person the floor and really take in what they are saying, because that is going to, I think that exchange when we're doing the questioning, you know, in community is where we affirm our humanity.
Yeah, very true. I very much agree. I think, like, exactly as you said, we have more in common than we don't, but we get very caught up in those differences and the nitpicking. Yeah. So, Kristen, what wakes you up at night and what keeps you from falling asleep at night?
Well, the stuff that wakes me up at night is really most of the time if I'm worried about one of my kids.
Right.
Or if I feel like I have been unkind to someone. If I feel like...
Oh, yeah. I have that too.
Yeah. If I feel like something, either I ran into someone or I was at a gathering or something and maybe we just got off on the wrong foot or I said something Certainly. That I'm worried that it didn't come out right and maybe I was like trying to make a joke or something that just didn't land. And so I think those are the things that wake me up at night. I think the things that keep me up sometimes, I mean, I'm a good sleeper. However, I can also get super excited about new projects. So if I start getting, if my creative brain starts going, I can just, yeah, it can be a little. So what I will do, because I think sleep is so important and I really, really cherish it, is if my brain is just, I've got so many different ideas. So I will actually get up and just do a brain dump and allow myself just to clear out all of that stuff. I don't have to organize it in the moment, but I can just trust that I've got it. It'll be there for me tomorrow morning. And now I can go to sleep.
Amazing. Yeah, I definitely, by the way, have the same with like any interaction that I felt didn't go well, or if I felt like I wronged somebody or I didn't treat somebody the way I would have wanted in the moment. I definitely think about those at the end of the day as well. But what are wallpaper words and why do they matter?
So wallpaper words are those words that we are using and we're assuming kind of a collective definition for those. So we've talked about the word success oftentimes right. is one that I think of as a wallpaper word because it has an academic definition, right? I mean, we can look it up in the dictionary. And within the context of the world that we live in, there are kind of these attributes that have been assigned to what is success. So, and even the word spiritual, right? Or the word
happy.
Abundance.
I think of happy.
Oh gosh, yeah, the word happy, all of these words, right? These are words that it is worth it for you to make sure that you are thinking about what your personal definition is. And then a lot of times you want to revisit it because these are kind of big terms that are going to, will change over time for you, their meaning and what they look like for you in kind of the day to day.
So true. Yeah. I think everybody's definition of those words could look totally different and we don't really examine that.
Yeah. And it should, right? Yeah. I mean, there'll be some commonalities in there, but I mean, we're all so different and we have these wonderful, unique characteristics. So bring them in to your definitions.
So true.
Yeah.
Well, you have a fascination with dualities. Can you explain what draws you to them?
I think I mentioned to you that I had one set of grandparents who they were married for 72 or 73 years, something like that. And my other grandmother that I was really close with, I think she was married for all of, I don't know, a few years.
Okay.
or something. I mean, and so it's like I grew up with these people who were so important to me, who had very different lived experiences. Yet for those differences, they kind of came together in what they thought about marriage. And so I see that duality. I guess the thing that I'm getting at when I talk about dualities is that two distinct things can be true at the same time, right? And so how do we hold this grouping of truths and how can they inform us, right? And what do we do with those? For me, life is a rich mix of these dualities, right? But kind of recognizing as an origin point and then seeing the mix in the middle.
Yeah, so true. I think there are so many dualities just within all of us. I don't know. I think we like to look at the world through like this lens that everything is black and white, but it's not. There's a lot of gray areas and a lot of nuance and duality within all of us. Well, I want to ask you about this whole concept of, is the problem really a problem? So what does solution-oriented thinking look like in real life for you?
Well, I'll give you an example that just happened to me. So I have the thing on my computer that reminds me of people's birthdays. And I have it set for like two or three days in advance. My thought being that that would give me time to get a little gift or whatever, right? So this pops up. And the other day, a couple weeks ago, actually, it popped up and it was a really good friend of mine's birthday. And I'm like, okay, note to self. And, you know, and then I got busy. And the day passed and I didn't do anything. I hadn't sent a card. I didn't do anything. I completely forgot about it.
Oh, wow.
So then I am making a problem out of the fact that I've missed this person's birthday, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, do I get one of those kind of funny belated birthday cards? Do I kind of do something a little bit more extravagant than I probably was going to do before? You know, like send flowers or big thing of chocolate. So I'm like, I'm just in this swirl of how do I fix the fact that I missed this friend's birthday? Okay. Right. I thankfully took a breath and reminded myself that I like to be in solution-oriented thinking. And what that looks like is all of this that I'm swirling around in, I care about this person. This person is important to me. The relationship I have with them is important. And I feel badly that I forgot their birthday. And so in that moment, it's like, oh, just pick up the phone and call them and be like, hey, oh my gosh, I love you. Happy belated birthday. And I hope you had a great day. Tell me about it.
Mm-hmm. Even just admitting I'm human, I'm flawed.
I'm human sorry. Error. I'm sorry I forgot about it. But really the solution-oriented thinking in that moment is that I just want to make sure that my relationship with this person is that this person knows that they're important to me and that I connect with them. And how better can I do that than to have a conversation and ask them some good questions and then listen?
Yeah, so true. I'm going to use that going forward. Solution-oriented thinking. Okay, well, we're almost out of time. I do have a few more questions. Yeah. You talk a lot about this concept of being a better stranger. What does that mean for you? How can we be a better stranger?
Well, again, I'll tell you a story because it's the easiest way. The other day I was waiting for a friend we were going to meet for lunch, and I was in this really nice little courtyard. The sun was shining. There's people having coffee, some people eating lunch. And it's just this really nice little space. And somebody left a newspaper on the table, and there was a little bit of wind. And so the newspaper starts swirling around and starts coming apart. And there's newspaper now swirling around this courtyard. And, you know, everyone's doing their thing, and I'm still waiting for my friend. And I just started picking up the newspaper, and I went around, picked it all up, and found a trash can. And that was that. And I did that not because I wanted anyone to congratulate me. I did that because
validation.
I didn't need anything. I just was thinking to myself, it's so much nicer to be in a space where there isn't trash. And, you know, what was a newspaper after swirling around on the ground for a little bit is trash. And so, I mean, that's a simple way that I can be kind of a better stranger is I have a choice in that moment to kind of notice it.
Yeah.
And leave it alone, or notice it and do the thing that actually makes the world that I want to live in.
Amazing. Love that. I think that's so true. Like, for all just our daily interactions, whether it's something small, like you're, you know, saying thank you at the grocery store, or asking somebody about their day, or making that small talk, I think it's really lacking in our world today. And I think we're all really craving it. And those little small things really add up and really make a big difference in other people's day. So,
yeah. And I think about, especially like as you were saying, asking that person when you're getting checked out at the grocery store, asking the person behind the register, right? How are you doing? How's your day going?
Yeah.
And you just think about kind of the potential ripple effect of that, right? That,
yeah.
So they smile, you smile, you know, you walk out, you're a lot more patient when you're, you know, somebody
in traffic or
your traffic and somebody's honking at you. And just to not underestimate how meaningful those little moments are.
Yeah. My grandma always said, you catch more flies with honey than vinegar.
So true.
To do that. Yeah, it's so true. Even just especially certain professions or certain interactions that people tend to be disrespectful towards, I think showing them that respect and kindness really goes a long way. Amazing. Okay, well, we're almost out of time. I just want to do my little rapid fire section. So basically just answer these next few questions with the first thing that comes to mind. So are you a morning person or a night owl?
Maybe morning.
Okay, nice. And what's your go-to morning ritual?
I don't like to talk a lot at the beginning in the morning. So my go-to is I breathe, drink some water. I usually make coffee, and then I sit outside if it's cold. If it's really cold, then maybe I'll sit inside. If it's cold and I can have a blanket, then I'll sit outside and I'll journal.
Amazing. You said 15 minutes in the morning?
15 minutes. Yeah. Because then I got to get on with my day.
My mom does that too. She read that book, The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
I think, and they talk about the morning pages every morning, just kind of doing, like you said, like that brain dump. What do you do to find hope when you're running low?
I go outside because either nature. I'm going to see nature, or I'm going to see another person and I can smile at them, and chances are they'll smile back.
What is your definition of a good friend?
Someone that makes me laugh.
Oh, yeah. That's important.
Doesn't take themselves too seriously or life too seriously, but they can be serious when you need them to be.
Amazing. That's definitely a good friend. What's one belief about spirituality or meaning making that people should let go of?
That somehow you have to be better, that you're not enough right now.
Right now, as you currently are.
Yeah.
So true. Okay. And what's one question you wish more people would ask themselves?
If my life was over tomorrow, am I living today the way that I could leave my life tomorrow with joy and contentment?
Living life to the fullest each day.
Yeah.
Love that. And what's one word to describe your inner world right now?
Oh gosh, it's kind of bubbling and fizzy. I've got a lot of projects that I am looking to put together. So there's like this kind of fun, fizzy, bubbly creativity that's happening right now.
Beneath the surface or bubbling up. And last question, who is Discovering Your Spiritual Autobiography really for?
It is for, I think it's the simplest answer is it is for someone who connects with something bigger than themselves, whether that's nature, whether that's God,
the universe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also that person is curious about reflecting on who they are in relation to that, which is bigger than themselves.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation. It was definitely a beautiful reminder that spirituality doesn't have to be lofty or distant. It can be woven into everyday moments, the questions we ask ourselves, and the way that we move through the world, and the stories that we tell ourselves about our own lives. Before we wrap up, I did just want to ask, where can my audience connect with you, read your work, or join any of your courses?
Yeah, for sure. The best place to find me is on the website, kristenswan.com. And then I am on the socials and things like that. But the website will have the full suite of things that I do and offer.
Okay, amazing. So I will link that in the show notes as well. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. We didn't save the world today, but we had a really interesting discussion around spirituality, curiosity, meaning making, and how to navigate life with more intention. I would love to hear your feedback in the comments. So let me know your biggest takeaway or what resonated with you the most. And as always, feel free to share this episode with a friend or someone who could use it. And don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe, so you never miss an episode in the future. And thanks again for listening to this episode of Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. Hope you all have a wonderful day, and I'll see you in the next one.